Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? Hi, kids. I'm just trying something new out there, Barry. You are listening to the What's Your Weird Story podcast. I'm your host, Adam Beebe, and also your host is Barry Johnston. Barry is with me.
What's up?
How's it going, Bear?
It's good. It's good, man. Just trying to relax as much as I can. The wife is out of town, so I'm on dad and mom duty.
Yes.
So this is actually my downtime right now as we're talking, and yeah, it's going good. I'm still alive, so
best thing you could ask for, right?
Half the battle, I guess.
That's right.
But yeah, no, everything's going well. How about yourself, man? How are things in your neck of the woods?
Hanging in there, just enjoying the milder than usual winter. Actually, you know, I take that back. I really like the cold, so I want it to be even more have a typical cold winter with lots of snow. Yeah. Had a little bit of snow, but hopefully we'll have some more. So I'm one of those people. I'm a polar bear. I'm a large, warm-blooded mammal, and I like the snow and I like the cold. So
yeah,
what you gonna do?
I feel the same way. You know, I lived up in Milwaukee for 5 years. That's where my wife is from. And I like it, man. I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's like you kind of get in the groove of winter, you know, and it's, I don't know. There's something I enjoy about it. But my wife hates the winter. So it's like she's not into cold. She grew up, you know, in the cold climate and she's over it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the crisp of the air. You go outside, breathe in deep, maybe it's almost a little too cold and you can feel it freeze in your nose and it's I'm alive.
Wakes you up. That's why it is invigorating, and that's why, you know, peoples of ancient time do different things like, you know, water purification, cold water stuff, you know what I mean? You know, the Russians and the, you know, jump into the cold lake while they, you know.
Yeah, the saunas.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Do the saunas.
All those people up there in the northern areas there.
Yeah. Kind of into the punishment of it.
Hey, you know, it's interesting, Barry, that we talk about all this cold weather and stuff, not only because it's here in the beginning of the year and it's cold.
Yeah.
But we got some stories from our guest today, Angela, who's going to tell us some cool stories about when she went to Alaska.
That's right, man. Yeah. She's got a really kind of a creepy story. I think people are going to dig. And as well as her other adventures up in Alaska. I love Alaska. Like, I love the idea of Alaska. I don't know that I could survive there on my own.
Oh, no. I definitely,
you know, but I do love that idea of, like, you know, no parameters. You can live how you want. I love that idea.
Frontier, man. That's the last frontier, you know?
For sure.
That's what it is. And,
for sure.
You know, now, Angela wasn't there in the winter. She went up in summer, and she described all of that. Yep. But, you know, it's just fun stuff. So, yeah, a little bit different from our normal fare. But, man, great stories. Yeah. And we're going to snow plow right in. Let's get the dogs up to the sled and let's hop a
Iditarod. Is it Iditarod?
Yeah, Iditarod. Yeah, man, that's it. And let's get on a prop plane with the floating things we can land, and let's do it. Let's go north.
Let's do it.
Alaska.
Let's do it.
Angela, thank you for being our guide and taking us up north. But yeah, all jokes aside, thank you for joining us. Thank you for being our guest, Angela. And what's your weird story?
Well, thank you for having me. I am excited to share my story. To give you a little bit of background about how my story happens. Right after college, I wanted to do something like the Peace Corps, but I had a boyfriend who is now my husband, so I think it worked out. It was a good choice, but I wasn't ready to be gone for 18 months. That was way too long. Because, you know, I wanted to be able to see him. So I started looking for some opportunities that might be like the Peace Corps, where I'd get to travel, see something that I'd never seen before, but also, you know, be back in a couple of months rather than 18 months.
Of course.
So my friends kept seeing, I had a lot of anthropology major friends, and they saw an opportunity for day camp directors or, you know, staff for day camp for Girl Scouts in Alaska. And they knew I was a Girl Scout when I was a girl. And none of them wanted to go to Alaska for the summer, but they keyed me into this job. And I applied, interviewed, bless the heart of Amy, who hired me, because in my interview, I kid you not, I said, I think it would be great to bring star charts and teach the girls about the stars in Alaska in summer.
There's
daylight.
Yeah, right. So everything was perfect up until that moment.
So either she didn't have very many applicants, or the rest of the interview was good because I still got the job.
I'm sure Amy regaled that story and possibly followed up with that great Southern expression of bless her heart.
Yeah, I am sure. She still thought I would do a good job. So the day I was supposed to graduate from college, I actually was on a plane to Alaska. So I didn't even walk in my ceremony. So I was pretty excited. So I was mainly in rural Alaska on the Kuskokwim River, which is sort of southwest Alaska. So it's pretty rural. You can't drive there. You have to fly from village to village. So we had home base of Bethel, Alaska, which has about around 6,000 people, but that was the biggest place that we were staying. The other villages that we were in have around 200 to 500 people.
Wow.
And we would fly in three-seater planes with, you know, these crazy bush pilots who...
I've heard a lot of stories about that.
Yeah.
I'm so into Alaska, by the way. Like, I watch all the shows, man. Like, I just, the idea of it is awesome. I don't think I could ever live there, but I love the idea of Alaska, you know?
Man, every holiday, Mary, that I go home and I'm going to visit with my mom, stay with my mom, my stepdad, they're always watching those Frontier Alaska shows.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, it's Alaska at the frontier, man. They're on it. That's the Christmas tradition now.
There you go.
Nice. I like it. Yeah, so it is a completely different lifestyle. You know, you have to be willing to live in way harsher environments than, you know, we get here in Iowa or the rest of the states. So that's, in a nutshell, why I was going up there, leading day camps with girls. So the real interesting story that happened to me while I was up there, one among many, is when we were coming back, there were two different groups leading day camps. So each of us there were two of us, and there were two sets, so four of us total. We had been out for about 4 weeks. We started at the beginning of June. It was now July 4th, and we were going to be celebrating back in Bethel, getting a chance to wash our clothes, shower, eat some food that wasn't rehydrated and cooked on a little camping stove, because that's how we've been cooking.
Wow.
And we got to fly in on July 3rd, and nobody else, our supervisor wasn't in from Anchorage, and the other group wasn't back from their last assignment. So we were by ourselves. My staff partner, Lauren, and I were there, and we were staying in the Immaculate Conception Catholic Church there in Bethel. They have like a school and a church. So there's several classrooms and there's cots set up in the classrooms because they host people quite a bit like okay. that. And it's run by the Jesuits. So there are Jesuit volunteers there and also Jesuit priests. So they were kind enough to let us stay. We got back. We showered. We got our luggage unpacked and we're hanging out for a little while. And while we're doing all those things, we just got the sense that we were not alone. You know, there was no real creepy noises. We just felt like you feel when you know someone is looking at you across the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you make eye contact with that person, and it's kind of a vibe of, how did I know they were looking at me? It was that feeling. And, you know, we kept brushing it off, and because we talked about it. I said, does it feel like someone is in the room with us?
And it was just and, you
know, we laughed, kind of, no, it's just because, you know, it's daylight all the time. We'd been staying up pretty late.
We're
feeling a little kooky because we're not having to work tonight. Yeah. You know, that's how it was feeling. So we said, nah, it'll be fine. We're fine. Nothing's going on. Whatever. We went to the one restaurant that was not Subway that's in Bethel.
Yeah, but I've heard wonderful things about the Subway in Bethel. Their Yelp is unbelievable.
So, you know, we left all our stuff, went and ate. This is the first time we have eaten food that was not like rehydrated beans and rice for a really long time. So we get back and we're hanging out and it's still just the two of us and just get the feeling once again that someone is with us. And, you know, at this point, we've got our pajamas on, you know, no bras, all that kind of thing. Just to be clear. Not going out, being around other people of attire.
Yeah. So you're in for the night. You went to not Subway, and you come back home, or temporary home, to the church in the classrooms where you're, and it's just you two. There's nobody there. It's just you two. Okay. Yeah,
exactly. So I say to my staff partner, Lauren, there's no one here. We're just creeping ourselves out. Look, come on. Come back down this hallway, and we're not going to see anyone. So she's at the far end of the hallway, and I'm closer to the exit, and I'm looking at her, and I say, whatever, Lauren, it's fine. And I say, is anybody here? I scream. I turn and run out the door. I don't care if Lauren's behind me or not.
Fend for yourself.
I am not waiting to find out if this is a ghost or a demon in this church or what. I run across the deck to the Jesuit priest's house, who he's hosting a visiting priest.
Oh, no.
Father Chuck.
And you're in night. You're in nighttime. That's hilarious.
I bang on Father Chuck's door. By this point, Lauren had caught up to me, and he opens the door, and I scream, Jesus Christ, there's somebody in the school. Holy shit. Not even thinking. I am swearing and taking the Lord's name in vain.
That's great.
A group of priests who, by the way, were just trying to play poker with their friends.
That's hilarious.
So, in my pajamas, I now have to lead the priests back over to the school. I don't even want to go in at this point. So, we make these guys go in, check things out. So it turns out when people aren't staying there, sometimes they let folks from the community who may not have a place to stay in the school.
Oh, my. Well,
yes. A specific individual was told, you need to leave. He had said, I'm going. But instead of leaving, he just stayed essentially in the ceiling and in an attic room.
Oh, my Lord, dude.
Cool. So for the entire day that we were there, from, you know, like 10:30 in the morning until like 8:30 at night, he had been in there, and we could sense that he had been there.
Whoa, dude, that is crazy.
The entire time.
That is crazy.
We just weren't, you know, we were like brushing off that feeling that someone was with us.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is worse. That is so much worse than a ghost or a demon or something like
no
that.
No kidding.
That's a creepy most.
I thought it was going to be a bear or something like that.
Yeah. Or a raccoon. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a guy who sometimes stays at the building there. You know, in the meantime, the two of us had just been showering.
Yeah.
Walking around.
Yeah.
And now Father Chuck did assure us that he went up, and then we went up into this like attic room as well. And you could tell that he had been staying there and that they didn't know that he had still been staying there.
Wow.
But he was gone. And Father Chuck goes, now, you know, you girls scared him just as much as he did. I don't know about that.
Yeah. He's a wild beast.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Wow, so, man.
We still had to stay there that night. And so we were not going to stay in one of the classrooms with the cops. So there was a pull-out couch, and we slept with the TV on, cranked to full volume, with the lights all on, because it does get a little dark, you know, around midnight and one. So we had the lights on the entire night. And the church got a lot of donations, but not a lot of great movie donations.
Yeah.
And so, there's no cable.
And there's probably not much anything on the aerial, is there?
Yeah, no. And, you know, this was like in 2007, so there was no Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, we're not watching great TV.
Yeah.
The only movie that we could find that wasn't like VeggieTales was Basic Instinct.
Oh, yeah.
Basic Instinct, lights on.
That's hilarious. Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so if you ever feel like maybe somebody is watching you, your body knows. Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Someone is watching you.
That's crazy.
That was... Not the turn. That was not the twist that I thought was coming at all.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah.
You genuinely provided the twist that I wasn't expecting. So that's great. That's perfect. Awesome.
That's great. I never knew that. I mean, you know, people talk about that where they're like, oh man, you know, I can feel somebody, you know, watching me or whatever. But
you know, he was very quiet. It wasn't as though we heard, you know, bump. Or shuffling or anything like that, which is why we kept brushing it off ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, if we had heard something, we would have thought, oh, you know, there is a squirrel or, you know, something.
Sure.
But
Wow, man, that's crazy.
the mere fact that he was so quiet and unperceived.
Yeah.
That's like, makes me wonder. It's like, how long has he... Was he living there when that nobody realized he was there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure. Yeah. Oh,
man.
Yeah.
Great story.
Yep.
Hey Barry.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a goat sucker?
What?
Goat sucker. Chupacabra.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen one of those?
I haven't seen one personally, but I've heard about them.
Yeah, me too. If anybody's got a goat sucking story, wait, if you got a goat sucker story, we want to hear it. If you got a Bigfoot story, we want to hear it. If you got a Loch Ness Monster story, or a Lake Champlain story, or Ogopogo story, or an Oingo Boingo story, wait, that was an 80s band. Anyway, you got a weird cryptid story, we want to hear it.
I didn't even know what a cryptid was, man.
Yeah, dude, cryptids. They're like the animals that haven't been necessarily proven by science. They're the ones on the edge. You know, they're not necessarily known animals, but they're known animals. We don't have the bodies or anything like that. So they're kind of like half myth, half story, based in reality, but still in that weird mystery area that we don't know about yet. Cryptids are fun.
It is a completely different way of living. So we were doing day camp for Yupik Eskimos.
Okay.
And that's the tribe of Eskimos that's in southwestern Alaska. So it was a pretty amazing experience because they really accepted us and taught us a lot of things about their culture too.
Yeah.
So the adults that we would meet up with to help lead these day camps for the girls, a lot of times let my staff partner and I do things that not every Yupik woman or girl got to do, which was pretty neat.
Wow.
So, cool. Yeah. So one of the things that we got to do that not everybody always gets to do is go hunting for clams in the ocean. So, you know, we're right on that edge of Alaska. The Bering Strait is right there. And so one of the adults that was helping us said, you know, I arranged for one of my friends to take us out on his boat. We'll go out and we will hunt for some clams. So we arranged to meet, you know, at whatever time. We walk up and our local contact hadn't arrived yet. The guy who's going to take us is like, come on, we'll get you some life jackets. And then he starts to load his shotgun into the boat as well. And we're kind of like, you know, we're just going out.
Yeah, clamming.
Like, what?
So, how big are these clams?
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. Like, why do we need a shotgun to go out, you know, the Bering Strait? So, you know, we're kind of, my staff partner, Lauren, she finally works up the courage. She says, so, what's the shotgun for? And he, you know, just matter of factly, he's like, well, we might see some beaver or something else that I can shoot. You know, he was fully prepared to take food home, whereas we were a little concerned.
You're still used to going to the grocery store and getting your hamburger meat or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we ride out, we take the river down to the Bering Strait, and he kind of circles around a little bit, and, you know, there's just water there. He's like, well, we got to wait a few minutes, and then there's going to be a sandbar here. So sure enough, a few minutes later, the tide lowers enough, so we're able to dig clams. But it was kind of a crazy thing that, you know, as outsiders, we were allowed to do some things that sometimes they don't even think of offering to other people.
Of course.
So luckily we didn't get shot.
And yeah. That's awesome. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Like, yeah. How, so you're out in the water and, the tide changes and you're on the sandbar. How deep was the water where you were on the sandbar where you were?
Yeah. It looks like you're standing on water. Like that's how close it is to the edge of the sand and the water. So I have a picture. It looks like I'm standing in water. Like,
if send that in if you want to. We'll put that up on our the Instagram, Facebook, and all
that. Yeah, I'll see. I'll have to find it. I'll have to dig through all of my photos and find it. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
So
yeah.
You were like, you weren't even like ankle deep. You were just right there on top of the sand.
Yeah, wow. It's like skimming the sand.
Wow.
Yeah. Very cool. And then, you know, we'd see like walrus that had been killed or, dead on the sandbar. So it's
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's great that, you know, especially in Alaska, that they allow the native people to keep their culture intact. Like that seems to be a premium, like, thought process, is that, you know, allow them to continue hunting, allow them to continue fishing, you know, in the ways that, that they did. I think it's great, for, especially from your point of view, where, you know, because I've been to other countries and stuff like that, and I've exchanged ideas and thoughts with people from other countries, but to be able to be involved with a people that have been that in that area for so long and that are a part of our culture, it's cool that they opened that up to you and that you were able to be, you know, involved in that. That's really neat. Really neat.
Yeah. You know, there is a frustrating and sad side to that.
Of course. Of course.
You know, even some of the older folks that I met, some of the elders that I met, had been sent to schools away from their family and forced to learn only English
instead
of their Yupik language. And so, you know, that's not that long ago that they were, you know, forced to do that. And so some of the things they were trying to recover and about, and you know, some of the other frustrating things are that there is a really high unemployment rate because there aren't a lot of jobs available.
Sure.
And there's a high amount of alcoholism as well.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, as people coming in to lead girls in different activities, we did interact with girls who had fetal alcohol syndrome, which was absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was 23 at the time, and I had girls asking if I would take them home with me and be their mom.
Oh, wow. You know,
because they, you know, saw that
that's tough.
A better option for them.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people, a lot of Native Alaskans, and a lot of folks who are trying to do really good things, but I did see that really frustrating side of it.
As Well, you know, in you see it here in the lower 48 with the Navajo Nation. I mean, it is just a sad, you know, those people have just really had a hard time. And they, you know, it must be difficult coming from a heritage like that and trying to adopt this new idea, you know, not new to them, but their ancestors trying to adopt this new way of living that has nothing to do with living off the land in a spiritual manner that gave them so much, you know. And it's not that the, you know, let's be honest, I mean, their way of living also was fraught with a lot of craziness. I mean, there was just, there's nonstop war and things like that, but they had at least, they were able to live and quote unquote worship or whatever in the way that they saw fit. And, you know, we've sent them down this crazy path. It's sad. It's really sad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would extend it not just to the Navajo and the Inuit, but all of the Native Americans.
Yeah. I say Navajo because it's the largest, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, it's,
it's crazy.
Unfortunate of our history, how we treated the, you know, the people who lived here before, and we took their land and we killed them in mass with either biological warfare or with smallpox and stuff like that, or just, you know, things that exposing them to things that, you know, they weren't ready for. You know, it's, you know, it's a tragedy, and we have to learn it. We have to accept it. We have to understand it. And those of us with the European ancestry, and you know, and obviously we there's a lot of problematic history to our country, but it's still even with all the problems going on today, it's still a great country.
Yeah.
And it's, you know,
We can appreciate things now. I think that's the important thing.
You know? And we're making strides in a direction to make things universally better. And there are other, you know, I mean, without getting too political, one way or the other. You know, it's always going to be a back and forth over ideologies. But I think it's in general society wise, you know, we're making strides to be more inclusive and appreciative of other cultures that have the influence on us, as our culture has so much influence on the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So, yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Back to Alaska.
Well, you know, it's hard to talk about some of these things without knowing some of the cultural background and right. some of the negative things that happened in the past and sure. atrocities. Yeah. So, and you know, some of the things I found, quote unquote, weird, but wouldn't be weird at right. all to someone who grew up there
yeah,
and exactly. had lived there their entire lives and knew the culture. My staff partner, Lauren, had lived in Alaska in a different part, but knew a little bit more, you know, had a little bit more education in Alaska and Alaskan history than I did, and knew a little bit more about the food and the culture than I did. And one of the things that's really important is being invited to eat in someone's home. You know, we never took that lightly because they were offering their food and their hospitality. And
yeah.
So, you know, we didn't have very much to offer in return, but we'd bring some of our food that we made. And we got an invite from one of the elders in the community asking if we wanted to go to dinner. And we weren't going to pass that up because, you know, it's a way for them to welcome us to their community and also a chance for us to get to experience life there as well. So we had already experienced a interesting foods when we had been invited to a potluck. Now, I love salmon,
mm-hmm.
and I had salmon every single way you could have salmon.
I bet.
And it was delicious.
I bet.
But at the time, as a 23-year-old, I was still just like, I had just learned to like salad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Now I will eat anything.
Sure.
But, you know, like iceberg lettuce, I'm gagging, you know, yeah. At that time.
Yeah.
And so some of the things were new. I would try them. But we had had salmon soup. And everything goes into it. Head, tail, eggs, meat, everything. And it tastes delicious.
Yeah.
But I did not get to try the head or the eyeballs or things like that because they're actually some of the better parts. So
right.
the elders at the potluck got to eat that.
Yeah.
So when we were offered to go to dinner with this elder, she said, well, we could either have fish soup or we could have bird soup. Well, I had already tried the fish soup. So, you know, me, logically, I have to try everything. I said, yep. let's try the bird soup.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense.
So the elder's facing me and my staff partner, Lauren, mm-hmm. is behind her. And I knew I had made a bad choice when her eyes got really big, and she slowly shook her head. No. But I couldn't back out. I didn't know how to say, oh, wait, no, I'm allergic to bird. I need, could have, you know, I could have thought that or something. But, well, I thought, how bad could it be?
Yeah.
You know, we've tried all this other stuff. Got to do it. So we get there and we bring a little reconstituted hummus because we had some powdered hummus and some crackers that we got to take along. So we had, you know, mixed that back up and we're bringing our hummus, you know, and crackers and we're going to eat bird soup. And so she shows us around her home and we sit down to eat. And she opens up the pot of soup, and it is a whole seabird of some kind, bone on. And then the broth is coagulated blood.
Oh, man.
Liquid, which is a delicacy
yeah.
in some places.
Yeah.
And other people do like that iron flavor, but is not a great one for me. Now, I think she recognized that maybe that was a little out of our comfort zone. So she did add a bag of ramen noodles.
Oh, that was nice of her. Yeah. Yeah. Blood-soaked ramen is right in your wheelhouse, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know,
Blood-soaked ramen was the name of my punk band in college. So, you know. One of many.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm eating it, and it tastes like what you'd think an iron-rich food would taste like. Not my favorite flavors, but, you know, I could eat the noodles for sure and a little bit of the meat. But my staff partner had it way worse. I have to talk really loudly to this elder to cover up the sounds of her gagging every time she would take a bite.
Oh,
poor girl. Were you
able to stomach that? I mean,
it did not taste good.
Yeah.
And you know, part of it psychologically is I'm just not used to eating.
Yeah, for sure.
Of course. I'm an adventurous eater, but I couldn't do that.
Yeah. I mean, it would be the same way if, you know, I was being served fried crickets in Mexico or something like that. It would be hard psychologically just because I know what it is.
But it's not on the radar. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was actually more difficult because of, you know, Lauren sitting next to me. Right.
Had it not been for my friend, I would have been able to get through it.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's the subtle sound of retching that really put the dinner off.
Yeah.
Made it a little difficult. But I was really worried that this elder was going to hear her gagging, and I did not want that to be the case. Yeah. So we managed to eat that, but all's fair because the elder that we were dining with took one bite of her hummus and said, "Thank you for bringing this."
It's disgusting.
Yeah, she did not like it at all. Okay.
Maybe if you put some of the blood, the coagulated blood on there, pick that up. But,
Oh, man, that's great.
But a little, what you want to do, Granny, is you want to get your cracker, you want to put a little of the hummus, and then you put one of those bird's eye on there and pop it in your mouth. And
that's great.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, yeah, you know, a little opportunity to taste some new food that neither of us really ended up liking all that much, but
of course,
you know, for the Yupik people that live there is still a lot of subsistence fishing and hunting as well, and we did get to try a lot of really delicious fruits and fiddlerhead ferns, which are pretty tasty when you cook those up.
Nice.
So it was actually pretty cool and an opportunity that really made me be able to eat new foods.
Yeah.
You know, so things aren't quite so weird now when I go to try them as they once were.
Yeah, no. Hey, if you've conquered blood bird soup, you can do anything, man.
Yep. Exactly.
That reminds me of a Anthony Bourdain story. When he was in Africa, they took him out on this hunt. And they literally ran this. I think it was a water buffalo or something. They ran it to the point where it couldn't run anymore, which is like 20 miles. They kill it, and they butcher it. And right then and there, they give him the butthole, which is the most prized. It's like one of the most prized pieces. And so he ate it, and it was they didn't clean it, but they just chopped it off. They like singed it over the fire real quick, and he ate it, and it made him sick for like a couple of weeks. But if you can make it through that,
dude,
your Big Mac's going to taste amazing.
I bet if he had had some ramen to go with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a few noodles to offset the taste.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And the girl, the babysitter girl, she picked up the phone, and there was a policeman on the other side, and he said, "We've tracked the phone call, and it's coming from inside the house!"
Whoa.
Yeah, dude.
I love those urban legend stories.
Dude, I do too. And you remember the one where the girl, it's always the babysitter, or it's the kids making out in Lover's Lane, but there's the one where the girl comes up and she finds the kids are watching TV, and she turns them around, and their face has SpaghettiOs!
Oh, man. Or the hook guy. Remember the hook guy? Oh,
the hook! The hook was hanging from the rearview mirror!
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you got a story that is similar to any of those awesome urban legends, we want to hear it. Because, you know, those urban legends, man, they started off as somebody's true life weird story. It's got to be true somewhere.
But, yes, it is. It's an amazing place. You know, the mosquitoes are so large that we got really good at just catching them in our hands.
Heard that.
You know, one-handed.
I've heard so much about the big mosquitoes.
Yes. Yep. So it was quite the experience. And when I came back, what was weird was having darkness at night. That was what was really weird when I came back. Sure. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I bet you that really plays, you know, tricks on your mind when it's like 1 o'clock in the morning and you're still seeing the light. It's like, I'm supposed to be asleep. And then on the counter side, in the wintertime, it gets dark for like, what is it, like a couple of months at least.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people say that they like it better in the winter because when we were there, the only way you're getting from place to place is either by boat on the river or by plane, which is really expensive. So in the wintertime, when the tundra's frozen and there's enough snow, you can
zip around on your
get everywhere you want to go.
Sure, that's hilarious. So,
yeah, you know, they have more freedom in the wintertime than they do in the summertime.
Crazy, man.
Yeah, yep.
That's
awesome.
And
they can see the stars then.
Yeah.
Ooh, and the aurora borealis.
Oh, and stuff. Man. Can imagine.
Yeah, I'd love to go up there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Adam, we should go up on a hunting excursion.
Bigfoot hunting, my friend.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
That's what we need to do. That's what we need to do. Yeah. Or, as I like to call it, a cruise.
Yeah.
For sure.
A cruise.
Not cruising for Bigfoot. Yeah, that sounds definitely
a
weird.
Cruise I mean, like, all a cruise can, on the all you ocean. Can drink, with drinks, all you can eat, all eats.
Yeah.
Exactly. And maybe just like use some binoculars, look on the shore, see if you
see. Oh, no. We can go inland. I'm not opposed to that. But, you know.
That's awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, yeah. Cool.
I had talked about the bush pilots earlier, but that was another kind of crazy experience because they'll fly in any kind of weather.
Yeah.
And, you know, once a week we were flying somewhere.
Really?
So we were in planes quite a bit. Funny because we'd hop out of the plane and then we'd be unloading the mail with the guy.
Oh, yeah, because he's also the mailman. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So, goods.
Yeah,
or
everything, dude.
Yeah, we were honorary, you know, postal carriers.
Wow. That's a dangerous thing, too, bush piloting. Like, a lot of them die. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there were a couple kind of scary landings. We were flying into an island. There's a village on an island and we're flying in and it was really, really foggy. And, you know, I'm sitting in the front seat looking and seeing the same thing the pilot is, and I can't see a thing. So clearly he can't either. And he knows that we're around the right place, I guess. And
wow.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can tell on the gauges that we're getting closer to land. And all of a sudden, the fog breaks just enough. And I hear the pilot go, "Oh, there we are." And I'm bracing for impact because we cannot be more than like 50 feet above the ground. So we had to pull back up a little bit. But we found the island. And, I mean, it was like another 30 seconds and we were landed. That was how fast.
Damn.
We came.
Wow.
Yeah. Got to make snap decisions.
Yeah. Yep. But he was like, no sweat. We made it. It was great.
Hey. Whole other breed right there, man.
Yeah. And on the return to Bethel one time, we had a really, when we were out in the villages, we were staying in essentially town halls or nurses' stations, you know, little medical buildings, which frequently have people going in and out every day with all of the mosquitoes coming in. So we had been in a particularly bad building. We were ready to get back, and the weather was kind of crappy, and all the people around the airport were like, are you sure you want to go? And our bush pilot, he was like, yeah, let's go. If you ladies are up for it, I am. And I don't know whether it's okay or not. But, you know, he was like gung-ho to go, too. I'm sure they get paid by flight, so he wanted to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got up in the air, and it was so crappy, we had to stay in the air, circling the airport for 45 minutes for the weather to get okay for us to land.
Dang.
And the only thing that I could do to not puke was look at the pilot's bald spot for 45 minutes. We went in a circle.
That's great. Around.
Oh, yeah. And,
but we did finally land, and it was okay.
Wow.
Now, you know, there aren't very many flights on commercial airlines that scare me.
Yeah. because of that.
Because I've had a lot of interesting. No kidding.
Yeah, because you're in those little, like, 2-3-seaters. You're not in the comfy, you know, jet. There'd be
27 like, or whatever. Like, the steering wheel is right there, you know?
Yeah,
right,
man. Right in front of me.
And that's the thing. It's like flying, kind of like surgery. Like, you think surgery is a lot less barbaric than what it actually is, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, flying is the same. It's like, you think there's a lot more involved in flying than just, like, getting in a freaking plane, starting the engine up, and taking off, and just kind of, just hoping that it works out.
A wing and a prayer. Yeah, I mean, that's where that comes absolutely,
man.
From.
It is, man. Because my grandfather, when I was a kid, my grandfather had a pilot's license, and he would take us up. And he would take us, I remember he had this plane where there were only 2 seat belts in the back seat. And I'd sit in the middle, and my sisters were older than me, and they'd sit on both sides of me. Yep. He would take that plane, man, and he would climb as quick as he could, and then cut the engine off. And then we'd float back down. And as we're floating down, I'm coming out of the seat, and my back is like up on the ceiling, and my sisters are grabbing my legs and pulling me down. He thought it was the funniest thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But after going through that, I mean, I can sit in a 747, no problem.
Yeah, I have a friend who has an ultralight. It's a little 2-seater, and he'll do the same thing.
Oh,
and he did it to me once, and I said, I will never go up with you again if you ever do that again.
Yeah, I mean, people that fly in crazy conditions, it's an art. It really is. I mean, and it's a lot less... probably less comforting for people to know that it's kind of not an exact science. It's feel.
Yeah.
It's feel, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And I joke sometimes, you know, if I have a bumpy flight or something, it's always terrible to remember that not every pilot was like the top of their class.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy may only be flying for a week, dude. You know, like, he may not have ever...
This guy might have just been, like, you know, a B student.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. Oh, that's hilarious.
Try not to think about that.
But yeah, 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 for sure. Yeah, yeah, that's so great.
I have one more story that I have to tell you guys, because it's hilarious.
Yeah, great.
It doesn't really fit in with weird or anything like that, but I think you'll appreciate it.
Cool.
So, remember, we were there for Girl Scouts. We were doing day camp. We would do, you know, stuff for the littler kids, like K through 8th grade during the day. And then in the evening, if there were any teenagers, you know, if there were any like high school students, we would do stuff with them. And that was pretty fun too, because, you know, they were, you know, silly and fun to hang out with. And, you know, they would teach us beading bracelet beading, okay. and you know, we'd make friendship bracelets. It was a fun time. And so in one village, the high school group begged us to have a dance. And, you know, at first I'm like, oh, that sounds great. It's going to be super cute. We had the city hall already. So, yep, that sounds great. And they just went with it. I mean, you know, it's light out. But yeah. at a dance, do you want to have a dance during the day?
No.
So they literally brought cardboard and duct taped the windows with cardboard.
Oh, wow.
So that it was dark in City Hall. And they were doing that through the day. They were decorating, you know, and we were going to come back after dinner. So we were talking over dinner, and my staff partner, Lauren, was like, What if they're inappropriate? What if, you know, when they're dancing with the boys, they're bit? And I was like, oh, no, we're going to get in trouble yeah. for, like, you know, letting these kids grind on each other or something.
yeah.
So then I was yeah. completely against this dance, and I was so nervous. And, I don't want to have to tell these kids to, you know, stop making out or anything like that. But we had already told them, and they had already invited everybody. So I said, well, we'll see how it goes. And if we have to shut it down, we shut it down, yeah. you know? So, there was a guy who was back from college, and they set him up to be the DJ. He had some sick beats, you know, that he told us about. So there's lights, and, you know, it's dark in there, and I walk in, and they start playing the first song, and this group of high school kids literally stands in a circle and bobs up and down to the music for 2 hours. That is all the dancing that they did for the whole time.
That's great.
It is a group in a circle just kind of swaying to the
funny.
Music. It was the most innocent high school dance I've ever seen.
That's like middle school. That's like early middle school, you know, where everybody's just kind of like
yeah.
stands around yep. and just, you yep. know.
Yep.
Boys yep. are on one side, girls are on the yep. other side.
And maybe it helped that we stayed the whole time, you yeah. know, we weren't going to like
yeah.
you know, leave them alone.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
They were just so innocent about it and just
that's listening. Awesome. That's great.
That's great.
yep. But it was so adorable. I mean, you know, they put so much time into it, and then they like literally stood in a circle.
That's funny.
That's fantastic. Hilarious.
That's great.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was a pretty amazing experience. Glad I did not do the Peace Corps. That would have been way too
yeah.
long.
Yeah.
And
Alaska's pretty amazing.
It is.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, beautiful from afar, but I'm sure when you're living yeah. in it, it can be tough.
Yeah, sure. I've met other people who have lived there, you know, if they were in the military or things yeah. like that, that they wish they could have stayed stationed there for longer because yeah. they loved it.
Yeah, I had a friend who lived there. He was stationed there, and he drove from, like, where was he stationed before? It was like, I think somewhere in Texas, all the way up there, man.
Oh yeah,
I had a friend do that too.
Yeah, yep. A hell of a drive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I was done for the summer, I stayed in Anchorage for a few days because my flight was, you know, I don't know, like on August 15th, and we got done on the 12th. So I was staying in Anchorage with a couple other people, and there were several that had driven up from Michigan mm-hmm. through Canada and that way. To live there this summer. Yeah.
I think that would be a really cool road trip to
yeah.
do,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, but if you got the proper, you know, like yeah. say you had an RV or something yeah. like that to
oh,
go,
sure.
you yeah. know, yeah, something where you had some comfort and you didn't have to
yeah.
stop and hope to find a hotel or camp out every night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yep.
Yeah. And when I was in Anchorage, you know, I was staying with this group of people. I'd never met them before, but they were willing to let me stay and at their place. And they're like, we're going to a party. It's going to be really fun. And there's a trebuchet. And I was like, I don't think they said trebuchet. yeah. But we got there, and there was this guy literally had a trebuchet, and they were just flinging
pottery. Oh, yeah. Oh, really? That's a good time.
What? Yeah.
I could get into that.
Yeah, any party with a trebuchet or any kind of catapulting device.
Yeah, really. He has a trebuchet.
Yeah, I mean.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool. Well, great. Well, thank you so much, Angela. Appreciate you coming on.
This has been great. This has been fun.
Yeah.
Those are great stories.
I love telling stories about my time in Alaska because, you know, for me, fresh out of college, a lot of weird things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was eye-opening for me and a ton of fun, too.
Barry, what do you think that people find the most far-fetched? Ghost stories or aliens as being the more unbelievable?
I would say aliens.
You know, I would agree with that probably too, because I think with ghosts, there's a part of the belief system that is abound throughout the world, and we want to have some kind of assurance of some form of life after death.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with aliens, it's unknown for sure. It's completely unknown. We have only our imagination. We don't have a lot of universal stories that we agree upon that these things exist, maybe.
To believe in aliens is to believe that we are not the sole existence of this world, which goes against a lot of belief systems.
It definitely does. But you know, the great thing about what we're doing here is we are open to all your stories about ghosts or aliens or anything in between or anything outside of. We're not here to judge. We're here to just talk and to share. And we don't want you to think you're crazy because you're not.
Man, so I just thought that if I were her and I heard something like that happen and I was thinking, what in the hell could that have been? I mean, I would have done the same thing. I'd have run out and probably tried to grab the closest person I could,
Yeah.
You know, to come see what's going on, you know?
That was a curveball.
That was crazy, wasn't it?
Because I did not see that coming at all. You know, there's just something about somebody living in your attic or, you know, being there where you don't know. And yeah, they're purposely trying to avoid being, you know, right, detected.
Yes.
And yes, I think that those priests were a little bit lenient on this, how creepy that was to have. Yeah. You have two young women in there,
right,
that are staying there. And, you know, this obviously it's a creepy old guy. He knew what he was not supposed to be living there.
Yeah.
His lease had gone up, whatever. Not really lease. But yeah, that's just, man, that's just creepy. Yeah. That would freak me out. Well, man.
And you know, I have a story that's similar to that. And when she started telling her story, I said, I have to tell my story. And so that's going to be coming up. You have a story. I have another story. Mm-hmm. And we're going to throw that in another episode somewhere down the line. But I can tell you that when you have something like that happen to you, your whole perception changes. If somebody has invaded your space, you feel like you're never alone. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like I've had my home broken into, you know, been robbed, and it's a violation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of your personal space. And that's just so creepy. That is so creepy that, especially the fact that they're girls, you know, that's, you know, in this
young,
day and age,
young women and on their own. And but you know, I love it because that is by definition, that was weird. That's a weird story. And it totally, like I said, it was totally a curveball. I did not see it coming, and it just hit all the right notes, and she told it great. And it was fantastic. And all her other stories are, man, you know, I mean, they're weird because they're unfamiliar, you know, and they're unusual. And it's about, you know, just acclimating to different cultures and more of an anthropological thing. Yeah. And it's not a dismissive weird. It's not saying this is weird, because weird's not always bad. You know, weird's good in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You know,
200 or 300 years ago, it would be looked at as weird.
Oh, yeah, you know, completely.
You know, because it was just such a different thing. But, you know, I think the cool thing is as a young person, if you can get out and travel and do something like that, and you expose yourself to different cultures and different peoples that have no basis on how they live their life around what how we live our lives. Mm-hmm. It just really does sort of solidify a lot of things, I think, in your life that you may have questioned a little bit, or I mean, it certainly opens up more questions, but it for me solidified a lot of who I am and why I'm who I am and why people raised me the way that they raised me. Right.
Yeah, definitely, man. It broadens the mind and your in experiences like that. Encountering different cultures like that is just, you know, it's so enriching.
Yeah.
To an individual and to and to greater populations, having, you know, having other cultures become, you know, influence on yours and and just being exposed to you and your culture and stuff. Right. It's good. It's not a, always a bad thing, you know, again. So that's what America's all about. You know, it's all these things. So without getting political, I'm just, ideologically,
well,
you know, that's what we're all about. So
if you look at, it's interesting how our cultures have evolved, and with all the turmoil that it takes to get to the next step, how we're able to look at each other at the end of the day and understand that we're all a part of the same thing. And this is a modern idea. I mean, this is something that is like really within the last 100 years or 150 years that we're starting to understand this globalization. And the more that we have connection with people through our devices and computers and whatever, the more we have to break down those barriers and understand what this person has been through and what the culture's been through so that we can understand better understand each other. It's really it's really fascinating, man. I'm on this big World War II kick and World War I kick. And you can look back at those times in our history and all the bad shit that we've done to each other. You can get on a plane and you can fly to Japan and you can walk around and they don't want to kill you. It's pretty fascinating that our ability to understand one another and get over things. It's pretty astonishing, dude. Within a couple of generations, we've gotten over some, not totally, not that we should forget them, but we've began to understand each other a little bit.
So, you know, I mean, that's, it's a weird world. It's a beautiful world. It's a scary world, and it's a bad place at times, but, you know, we're all the same. We're all one race, the human race. We need to get over a lot of our, you know, we can accept, have your culture, but get over tribalism, you know? We don't need to fight about land and fight about oil and fight about all this stuff. We don't need to fight. We need to get along, get together, blah, blah, blah. I'm a big, anybody that knows me knows that I'm a, I'm not hippy dippy, but I'm a big, you know, believer in that everybody is equal in men, women, and all races are equal. We're all human race. We're all one thing. Let everybody live and let live, that kind of deal. I love the idea of what I call a Star Trek world, where we have, as a race, gotten over the need for money and gotten over poverty, and everybody, you know, knows how to read, and everybody eats, and everybody, you know, works and does something that they really want to do, and everybody lives in a relatively, you know, happy and productive life because people have gotten over a lot of the bullshit that keeps us all down, you know?
Well, and we realize we're all participating in this thing.
Yeah.
And you take away the government aspect and all that. I'm just talking about the people. I think the by and large, the global humankind idea is one of peacefulness and wanting to see what we can accomplish and how we can come together. I think that is something that only modern man has been able to experience. And we're at that precipice where, okay, we've got all the technology. We've got everything that we need to live our lives. What are we going to do now to make it a better place? You know, with all this time on our hands to contemplate all these things, you know, what are we going to do with it? Are we going to squander it? Are we going to, you know, are we going to blow each other up, or are we going to sort of persevere and, you know, shoot out the other side, you know, with the ability to speak to each other, you know, through telekinesis?
You know, I think,
I think
sorry to get off on a crazy tangent.
Yeah, I know. But I think the answer is simple, and I think it's this. We just need to add ramen.
Add ramen. Get you a bird. Just cut the neck off the bird. Throw it into a pot.
You know, and that's all metaphor. That's all metaphor. But yeah. So anyway, Angela, wow. Kicked off a really deep conversation here at the end.
It needed to happen.
It needed to happen. And, you know, because we got to keep reminding ourselves, we're all people. We're all the same. Yes, we disagree and we don't get along sometimes, but we need to work better at that. We all need to treat each other better and not get so wrapped up in our own lives and just, you know, experience each other and connect with people again. And, you know, one of the reasons that we're doing this and the way we do it is so that we can do that. So we can share stories and we can share experiences and we can make that human connection because we're all together on this marble flipping around the world.
That's
this ball. It's a ball, and it's a sphere, and that's what it is. So, yeah. So, hey, exactly. Angela, thanks for being on. Everybody out there in Weirdsville, I think maybe, should we call the fandom, should we call it Weirdsville? I don't know. If you guys got a better name for it,
do it.
You know, let us know.
Weirdsville. But right after, I love Weirdsville. It.
That's our community. That's our community. Yeah, you know, it's been used before, but guess what? That's our community is Weirdsville.
Yeah.
And, hey, everybody out in Weirdsville, thanks for listening. Bring us your stories. Talk to us. And be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.